for example, right? In 1948, there was dancing in the streets everywhere in Eretz Yisrael, including in Bnei Brak. Actually, at that time, most of the Haredi Jews lived in northern Tel Aviv. It's only most of them moved even later a little bit, to Bnei Brak. But among the Haredi Jews, there was dancing in the streets when the state was declared. And in the initial years, the Israeli flag actually flew on top of Panovich Yeshiva in Bnei Brak. Right? I myself witnessed, when I first came to Eretz Yisrael a few years later, that there were a lot of Hasidim, Gera Hasidim, other Hasidim, who actually said Hallel with a bracha, not on Yom Atzmaut, but on Yom Yerushalayim. In other words, they felt that Yom Yerushalayim fit in much more correctly from a halachic perspective, right, into the days that you're supposed to say Hallel. And I actually remember I went to Daven at the Coast on Yom Yerushalayim. I found quite a number of Hasidim that in those days actually said Hallel with a bracha on Yom Yerushalayim. Okay? I remember one time doing a shiva call in Bnei Brak to somebody who's very yeshivish, very Haredi, sort of Panovich oriented. And it happened to be, the shiva happened to be very close to Yom Atzmaut. And they started conversing, they started schmoozing and talking, and they were really recollecting so fondly, like that day in 1948 when the state was declared, and how they were digging trenches because they thought Nebuch, Rachmana Litzlan, will be killed, people killed, they'll have to, have places to bury them. But they remember that when the day that the state was declared, there was mamish singing and dancing and such simcha, right? And obviously these were very Haredi Jews that were involved in this conversation. So it's simply not true, right? It's simply not true that the Haredi camp is against Medinas Yisrael, right? There's somebody who's called Menachem Kasher. You have a key? There's a bunch of them in the back. There should be a bunch over there on the shtetlis. Okay. There's somebody called Menachem Kasher, who was the author of an encyclopedic work on Medrash. We actually have it here, called Torah Shalem. Right? It's a very famous work. It's mamish the most encyclopedic work on Medrash that we have today. Right? Now, he was a prominent Gera Chassid. Rabbi Nachum Kasher was a prominent Gera Chassid, who also wrote a sefer called, or two svarim sort of combined, called Hatkufa Hagdola and Kol Hator, right? Which portrays the founding of Medinas Yisrael in highly positive religious terms. Right? He was not ostracized for it, except for the Turi Karta, by very few people. He was not put in Chayrim for it. And on the contrary, it was a work that was highly respected. Right? Furthermore, we know that there are religious parties, Haredi religious parties in the government. Right? Number of Haredi religious power department in the government, a Degel HaTorah, and a party that's Degel HaTorah is mostly for the Litvisha world, and there's a party for the Hasidish world, for the Sfaradim. There are religious parties, Haredi parties in the government, right? And if they were against, Hashkafa-wise, if they were against Medinas Yisrael, believe me, they wouldn't be participating in the government. On the contrary, Neturei Karta, they're against participating in government. In fact, they hold it's usher even to vote in, an election here in Eretz Yisrael. So the fact that Degel HaTorah and other religious parties actually are in the government shows you that they're intrinsically not against an independent state of Eretz Yisrael. Okay. Now, of course we know there are issues, Haredim in general, I mentioned that I came across some that said Hallel on Yom Yerushalayim. Haredim in general will not say Hallel on Yom Atzmaut. Okay? Like, why not? If they're for Medinat Yisrael, why aren't they saying Hallel? So let's just understand that saying Hallel or shaving on Yom HaTzmut or singing, you know, and having live music on Yom HaTzmut, these are halakhic issues and really have to be taken as such. They're halakhic issues. Is a declaration of a state, as much as it's positive, is it something that warrants Hallel? I told you that many people feel that Yom Yerushalayim fits in much more to what the Gemara talks about, days which obligates Hallel. Why? Because Yom Yerushalayim was the day of a battle victory. Right? The day that lives that were saved in the Six-Day War, right? We captured Yerushalayim. That was on you know, as part of a tremendous, tremendous victory. And that does fit in to when you should be saying Hallel or not. Some people feel that Yom Yerushalayim does not, and Memela, they do not say Hallel. But that has nothing to do with the fact that they feel very positively about the existence of an independent state of Eretz Yisrael. Let me give you even a stronger example. Rav Soloveitchik. Right? Rav Soloveitchik was the religious head of the world Zionist movement. And he was the head of Mizrahi. He was the posek and religious head of Mizrahi in America. Okay, he wrote the sefer called, he wrote an essay called Kol Dodi Dofek, which is based on Psukim and Shir HaShirim, Kol Dodi Dofek, where he talks about the opportunity and the greatness of the fact that we were able to be in an independent, you know, Eretz Yisrael in our time. It's a fabulous essay that all of you should read, okay? But Rav Soloveitchik did not say Hallel on Yom HaTzmut. He was again saying Hallel on Yom HaTzmut. Maybe if you say it all the way at the end, like after Aleinu, not really in its place, then he, you know, was makel for people. But in general, he was again saying Hallel on Yom HaTzmut. Does that mean that he was anti-Medina? He wasn't. He was very, very much, he was one of the strongest proponents, you know, for the religious significance of Medinas Yisrael. Okay? There were some Tanoim, Amoraim, if any of you learned Masechet Megillah, that were against, like, commemorating Purim with Kriyas HaMegillah. Right? There are different opinions, whether Esther belongs in Kisvei HaKodesh, Esther doesn't belong in Kisvei HaKodesh, right? Does that mean that they were against the miracle of Purim? Obviously, that's ridiculous, okay? It simply means that from a halachic perspective, they felt that you have no right to, you know, declare a new sefer in Tanakh, and even more so, that all of a sudden develop a new mitzvah of, mitzvah Rabbanan, but still, of Kriyas HaMegillah, right? So the very fact that some people are against some of the halachic dimensions of Yom HaTzmut does not at all mean that they are against the founding of Medinas Yisrael and don't see that in a positive light. Most Jews in the world, including Haredi Jews, feel very positively towards an existence of an independent state. I just want to add as a very interesting thing in terms of the state, 1948, when the state was declared, is year in the on the Jewish calendar was year 5,708. Okay. Let's see if I can find my notes here. Okay, the 5,708th pasuk in the Torah is Vaviyacha Hashem Elokecha Ela Aretz Asher Yorshu Avosecha, that I will bring you back to the land that your fathers inherited. That's the 5,708th pasuk in the Torah, corresponding to 1948. Okay. So, okay, it sounds like, hey, Sosnovsky's crazy. Everybody knows that there's a difference between, you know, that the Haredi world is not pro, you know, Eretz Yisrael. So what's the issues, right? What are they debating? And I believe the main issue is as follows. Right? The main issue is, that, let's face it, every religious Jew does not want Medinas Israel to be a secular state. Right? Every religious Jew wants it, you know, to be a step towards, like, really a religious state. In fact, in some ways, the idea of Eretz Yisrael today being so secular, you know, can you imagine somebody 1,000 years ago imagining, well, when we'll finally come back? You'd think that everybody in the streets will be with long tzitzis and payas and shrine, or whatever. The fact that, you know, it's an irreligious state on the whole, not predominantly, is like shocking in a certain sense. Okay? So that's a metzias. And we'll talk about the fact that the Gra predicted it. The Gra predicted it 200 years ago when people weren't thinking of Eretz Yisrael. He predicted that when we will come back, he spoke about that predominantly, that the leadership and that predominantly Klal Yisrael is going to be non-religious. And he explains why, based on Kabbalistic factors, whatever. Something that's, yeah, I know more or less what he's saying, but it's a little bit beyond me what exactly he's saying. And you don't know Kabbalah, so what's the point? You know, but he does predict it, and he says that that's what's going to be, which is shocking, because 200 years ago when he wrote it, there was almost no such thing as a non-religious Jew. Okay? But that's what he predicted, that ultimately when Klal Yisrael will come back, the leadership and the predominantly most of Klal Yisrael is going to be non-religious. And again, he talks about the Kabbalistic reasons, like why that is inevitably going to happen. Okay. The difference is as follows. Everybody, again, as I said, every religious Jew wants the state to be a religious entity. Can I ask, guys, you guys in the back, first of all, go towards here and you'll see, so there's a sheet that I will be learning from. Okay? And also, it's hard for my voice to carry, so if you can move up, I very much appreciate it.
Okay.
So what are the issues? The issues between the religious, the Haredi religious, and the, you know, America Sarab religious or Tzioni religious is basically the following. Yeah. How do you relate to a predominantly non-religious government and a non-religious state? How do you relate? We all want to influence it, and we all ultimately want it to be a stepping stone to what we're really looking forward to, which is Shia, etc. But that's not the case right now. It's basically a non-religious government and a non-religious state. So how do you relate to it? So the America Sarab world and the Mizrahi world, the Zionist world feels the way to do that is that you have to be part of the secular government, and you have to be part of secular society. You can serve in the army, and you can work together with them, and you act positively towards them, and they'll be able to relate to you. That's the way you're going to influence, and change Eretz Yisrael ultimately, slowly, into a religious entity. That was more or less the philosophy of our cookie. Everything ultimately is going to really get there. The question is the process. So they feel the process is to join the non-religious, to join the government. Right? That's the way to do it. And by the way, today, about 30% or more of officers in the army are people who wear kippah. It's a remarkable thing. 30-40%. And it gets more and more all the time. Believe me, in their own way, they are having influence. Somebody like Amnon Yitzhak, it's believed that he's affected to some degree around 1 million Jews in Eretz Yisrael, who became at least partially Baal Tshuva, mostly Sfaradim, or more religiously oriented, more religious feeling. That doesn't mean that they're all Mamish Shomri Torah Mitzvahs to the fullest, if that's what we're saying. But at least they keep Shabbos, put on tefillin, keep Taras HaMishpacha. There are a lot of people that are out there that are basically look non-religious, but somehow do keep mitzvahs.
Kippur is a day in Eretz Yisrael that you can hardly see. We're here in Beit Yes, you can't sense it. But if you go to Yerushalayim, there's hardly a car that's in the street. Somehow everybody celebrates Yom Kippur. To remember it. So that's what they feel, that the way to do it is by joining the army and serving in the army. And that's the way you're going to really, you know, produce change in the long run. The Haredi world feels, no, there's tremendous danger of, like, you know, being together with, like, a non-religious world, you know, especially with they are the leaders of the government, and they dominate. They're going to have tremendous influences on them. Right? And therefore, we can't do that. So we have to isolate ourselves, you know, not serve in the army. We have to isolate ourselves, not go to the same schools as them. We have to have our own institutions. We have to have, yeah, we have to be our own, we have to have our own communities, our own neighborhoods. That's the way that ultimately we'll get there. But we can't do it by joining them and being part of them. That is the true difference between Arabian world and the America Zarah and the Zarahi world is not towards, is not in terms of an attitude towards the state. Both religious Jews, Haredi Jews, non-Haredi religious Jews, they all have a very positive disposition to an independent state of Israel, with the exception of Neturi Karka, like I said before, the Satna Rebbe Sheikh in Eretz Israel. Okay. Now with that, so the question is, how can anybody have a negative attitude towards independent Eretz Yisrael? So where is the Satmar coming from? Where is the Turi Karkar coming from? Right? So that is what we're going to try to develop in the next, every time we have. We're going to look at a Gemara that deals with it to some degree. And then we'll try to see, and by the way, you'll see that from the Gemara, you'd say the Satmar are right, the Turi Karkar is right. And we'll try to show you why, you know, what the response to that is, and why they may not be right. So let's look at the Gemara.
The Gemara is in Ksubis, at the end of Ksubis. Look at page 220. Kuf Yud, we'll start with there. Kuf Yud, Amud Beis. Let's start towards the bottom. It doesn't have exact... not directly related to that topic, but it's a good way to start. Okay? Look at 3, 6, 3, 4, 5, 6, around 7 lines from the bottom. Tana Rabbanu. It's in the middle of the line. Tana Rabbanu la'olam yadarot. I have one more sheet.
There's some more. There should have a few, actually. Anybody needs it, please.
Okay, so the Gemara starts as follows: Tana Rabbanan, La'olam Yadur Adam be'Eretz Yisrael. A person should always live in Eretz Yisrael. A person should live in Eretz Yisrael. Afilu be'ir sherubei ruba obdei kechavim. Even in a city that are mostly idol worshippers, va'yadur bechutz la'aretz, and he shouldn't live in chutz la'aretz. Va'afilu be'ir sheruba Yisrael, even in a city that's mostly Yisrael. In other words, not even in a borough park, in a Muncie, wherever. Right? A person should live in Eretz Yisrael. Okay? Shekol ador be'Eretz Yisrael, domer kemisha yeshlo alaka. Whoever lives in Eretz Yisrael, he's like he has a god. Ve'chol ador be'chutz la'aretz, whoever lives in chutz la'aretz, domer kemisha ein lo alaka. As if he doesn't have a god. Shenemar, Losseis Lachem is Eretz Canaan. I will give you the land of Canaan. Lios Lachem Lelakim, to be for you a god. As in Eretz Canaan, that's where I am a god. Okay? I guess it means, I don't know exactly, it's hard to say exactly what it means. I would say that, you know, one of the pleasures of living in Eretz Yisrael, I remember one time driving through Bethlehem on December 25th, and I see lights and everything, and I was wondering, what's going on? And it took me like another 10 minutes of my trip to, hey, wait a second, December 25th. Yeah, Bethlehem is a Christian city. Okay? you go to America already from November, you know, 28 days to Xmas or whatever exactly it is, and jingle bells and jingle bells. You know, you have a constant influence of Avodah Zarah. Okay? That Baruch Hashem doesn't exist here. Okay. So the Gemara says, V'chol she'ein ador v'aretz ein lo l'ka. What? If somebody doesn't live in Eretz, or doesn't have a God, el lo melcha kol ador b'chutz aretz ki ilu ovid avodas kachav. If he's ovid avodas kachav. V'chein b'david huom. David, when you know he was running away from Shaul and he had to run out of Eretz Yisrael, that was his biggest complaint. You chased me out of Eretz Yisrael. I had to leave Eretz Yisrael. Kigash, he tells Shaul, Kigashuni hayom mistapeach benachlas Hashem. You chased me out from joining into the nachlas of Hashem. Leimar, it's as if you told me, Leich avod alehim acherim. V'chimi amal leDavid, Leich avod alehim acherim. Shaul ever told David, go serve Avodah Zarah. El alo melecha. David was telling him, you chased me out of Israel. You made it as if I worshipped Avodah Zarah. They call Ador b'chutz laretz ke'ilu ovid Avodah Zarah. Okay, now the Gemara starts that we're really interested. Rab Zera habikum mishtamit mineid Rab Yehuda. Rab Zera was a Talmud of Rab Yehuda, and he would stay away from Rab Yehuda. He would stay away from him, right? Try to avoid him. The Bayil Mesak Eretz Yisrael, because he wanted to go to Eretz Yisrael. Rab Zera wanted to make Aliyah. And the Amar Rabbi Yehuda, his Rebbe, said, Kol Olam B'Bavel Eretz Yisrael over B'Yaseh. Whoever goes from Bavel to Eretz Yisrael is over on an Aseh. The Aseh means a mitzvah Aseh of Medivri Sofrin. It doesn't mean a Deraisa. Shenemar, the Navi says, Bavela Yavo. The Navi Yirmiyahu is talking about when you'll be chased into Bavel. You'll come to Bavel, v'shama you. And that's where you shall be, ad yom pakdi osam, until HaKadosh Baruch Hu, like, remembers you and takes you out. Okay? Nu'um Hashem. So, Rabbi Yehuda was of the opinion, the Navi tells you, when you go to Bavel, you got to stay there, until HaKadosh Baruch Hu is ready to take you out. Right? So, Rab Zera, so what? Rab Zera ignored that pasuk, right? So the Gemara says, Rab Zera who beklei sharis ksiv. Rab Zera says that pasuk isn't talking about people; it's talking about Bavel Yavo. If you look at the pasuk, it's talking about the kelim of the Beis Hamikdash. It's going to come into Bavel until HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants to bring it back to Eretz Yisrael. Okay, Rab Yehuda. So, if you look at the pasuk, that's true. So how did Rabbi Yehuda use that as a source that you're not supposed to go back to Eretz Yisrael? So Kadosh Baruch Hu takes you there. Okay. So Ksiv Kra Achrina. There's another pasuk. Hishbati Eschem B'Noz Yerushalayim B'Tzavos or by Yolos HaSodeh. The end of the pasuk is Im Te'iru V'Im Te'oreru Esa'ava Achetechbos. Now this is the pasuk that's going to be the key of what I'm going to talk about. It's a pasuk in Shir HaShir. Now, Shir HaShirim is a mashal of the love between HaKadosh Baruch Hu and Klal Yisrael. Right? And that Klal Yisrael, in the story of Shir HaShirim, is like the relationship between Klal Yisrael and HaKadosh Baruch Hu is like an almana chaya. Almana chaya means that sometimes a woman could be an almana even though her husband is alive. How is that? That the husband is off somewhere, who knows where, right? And somehow they just can't come back to each other. So she's like an amana chay. Okay, that's the mashal of Shir HaShirim. That once Klal Yisrael, you know, was sent out into Golus, they always, HaKadosh Baruch Hu and Klal Yisrael are always trying to get together again. You know, somehow it doesn't work, right? Mashal is like an amana chay. So, but at some points in Shir HaShirim, they're about to get together. Right? So Shlomo HaMelech says in Shir HaShirim, three times this pasuk appears. Twice it's exactly the same, and one time with a little bit of a change. The pasuk is as follows. Hishbati eschem benos Yerushalayim. I make you swear, right, you daughters of Yerushalayim. Right? In Te'iru v'Te'oru, Hishbati eschem Yerushalayim, that you'll be kayolos hasadeh, that you'll be like the
animals of the field, like the deer and the animals of the field, right, into Iruv and to Oru Esahava Achakatma. If you'll do something to arouse this love between Klal Yisrael and HaKadosh Baruch Hu until it's desired, until HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants it. So that pasuk appears three times at the moment of the Klal Yisrael is about to get together. You know, back to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, no, be careful, right? I make you swear, I give you an oath, that you're going to be like the wild animals, like the deer of the field, which means you'll be hefken, right? If you do something to arouse that love, meaning if you force HaKadosh Baruch Hu coming back and connecting to HaKadosh Baruch Hu and Eretz Yisrael until HaKadosh Baruch Hu desires.
Okay? So, the Gemara says, Rabbi Zeira, what does he do with that pasuk? Ahu shel yalu Yisrael b'chom. That means a Klal Yisrael, or there's a girsa on the side, kichom. That Klal Yisrael is not supposed to scale Eretz Yisrael. Kichomim is like a wall, that you shouldn't go en masse. Right? I don't know if any of you know what en masse is. It means you shouldn't go multitudes. Because you can't go back in large numbers to Eretz Yisrael. Okay? So in other words, that individuals, however, right, the Navi warns you, the Shir HaShirim warns you, right, that you can't go back en masse, like in multitudes, to get back Eretz Yisrael. But that doesn't mean that individual people can't make Aliyah. Okay? So the Gemara says, Rab Zeira, hu shel yali Yisrael b'chom. Rabbi Yehuda, right? So Hishbati Achrina Ksiv. There's another Hishbati. Rabbi Zeira, Umbeboilik, Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Hanina, the Amma Gimel Shavuas Halalu Lama. Why are there these three oaths? That's the title of my talk, the three oaths. There are three times that Shlomo HaMelech all of a sudden says, Hishbati Eschem Benos Yerushalayim, Kayolos Hasadeh, into Iruv, into Toru Esavat Shetechbetz. I make you take an oath that I'll make you hefka if you're going to arouse the love until I want it. So what are these three oaths? So Gimel Shvuas Halal Ulama. So the Gemara says, Achas Shelo Yali Yisrael B'chom. One Shvuas is warning Klal Yisrael. Don't go back en masse, in masses, to get back Eretz Yisrael until HaKadosh Baruch Hu takes you there. Okay? Va'achas shashbia HaKadosh Baruch Hu es Yisrael shel yimordu be'umas ha'olam. Second oath is if you were sent into Golos and your host nations allow you to live there, you have no right to rebel against them. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, you rebel against the umas ha'olam, I'll make you mamish like hefka. Right? You'll be free game for everybody. Until HaKadosh Baruch Hu is ready to take you out of your countries of Golos. That's the second oath. And I told you that in Shir HaShirim, this pasuk is mentioned exactly the same twice, and with some changes the other time. So what's the third oath? Va'achas sheshbia HaKadosh Baruch Hu sa'ovdei kachavim. And the third oath is where HaKadosh Baruch Hu made the Umma Sa'ol of the Goyim, the ovdei kachavim, take. Right? They also have an oath. Shelo yishtavdu behen b'Yisrael yosem edai. That they have no right to make Klal Yisrael in servitude more than is appropriate, or more than is necessary. Okay? So, again, there are the Shalosh Shavuos. What are the Shalosh Shavuos? One, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is mashbias, that we can't take it out of sovereignty. We can't go back by force. We can't go back in masses. That's the first. Okay, until HaKadosh Baruch Hu is ready to take us back. Second is, we can't rebel against our host nations in order to go back to Eretz Yisrael. Okay? And if we do, the pasuk says that we'll be like kayolos ha'sadeh, we'll be fair game, right? Like the animals of the field. We totally have to. Right? And the third is the oath that HaKadosh Baruch Hu made the umas ha'olam take, the nations of the world take, that they will not place Klal Yisrael into servitude more than is appropriate and necessary.
Okay. So says the Satna, hey, wait a second, well, look at the Gemara. That's what the Gemara says. You have no right to take Eretz Yisrael by force. You have no right to rebel against your host nation. Right? You have to wait until the Kaddish Baruch Hu brings you back. Right? That is in the Turi Karta Shita. That is in the Satman Shita based on the Sholosh Shavuos. And it's dangerous. Right? If you do it, the Pasuk says, you're going to be Manashek. Right? In fact, the argument is, according to those circles, that maybe that was why the Holocaust occurred. Okay? Because once we tried to get our way back to Eretz Yisrael on our own, and to rebel against our host nation, but to try to go back, you know, in masses, the Pasuk tells you, you're going to be Hefka. Right? That's what happened. Of course, the other side feels just the opposite. The reason maybe why it happened, I don't know why it happened, was because we didn't, once we had the opportunity to go back, we didn't go back. Okay? So we'll talk about that a little bit later. Okay? So that is, sounds like they're right. That's what the Gemara says. Okay? Not only that, they have a very powerful proof that they're right. Because Chazal talk about the Bnei Ephraim. There's anybody that actually, it's a Gemara at the end of Sanhedrin. Okay, anybody know about the Bnei Ephraim? Shevet Ephraim, Bnei Ephraim. So they had a calculation of how long the actual Shevet of Ephraim was supposed to be. And according to the calculation, it was quite a big number of years before actually he went out. Actually, were freed. And the Mela, according to their calculation, they went and they waged war against the Pelishtim, against, you know, those people, you know, in order to get back Eretz Yisrael. What happened to them? They all killed them. Okay. So it says the Satna, look, you know, if you try to go before the time, look what happens. Okay. That is the position of the Neturi Karta. And that is the position of the Satma, that we have no right as a nation to go back again. Individual people are allowed to make aliyah according to this Gemara. That was Rebbe's position. Right? But nevertheless, we have no right to do anything to try to get back Eretz Yisrael on our own until a Kaddish Baruch Hu is ready to take us back. Okay. Now, how do we counter that? Powerful argument. So how do we count? Okay, so let me just give you a number of ways, responses to this argument, to the Satna argument, to the Turi Karta argument. One of them, it's been written up, but I personally heard it from Rav Aaron Soloveitchik, Zichrono Livracha. One time, there was a time I was sitting in on Rav Soloveitchik's shir. I learned personally in RJ and Yeshivas Rabbeinu Yaakov Yosef. There was a couple of years that the Rav started, at one point the Rav Soloveitchik started giving shurim in the afternoons. So some of us, like, got permission to attend this year, and after learning most of the day, we traveled down to listen to him for a period of 2 years. So I happened to be there, you know, and Yom HaTzvot, and Rav Aaron Soloveitchik, Yeshiva's brother, like, announced that he's giving a special shir, Yom HaTzvot shir. So this is what he spoke about. And his argument was as follows. There are three oaths. What are the three oaths? One is that we can't take Eretz Yisrael, we can't go there in masses. Right? What's the second oath? We can't rebel against our host nation. What's the third oath? What's the third oath? It's an oath that the Ummah Sa'ola had to take. And what is that oath? Shelo tishtabdu behen Yisrael Yosef Adai. That they can't. However, the Ummah Sa'olam have a shvua that they cannot make subservient Klal Yisrael more than is appropriate or more than is necessary. Okay. So what he asks, what he claimed is that these shvuas are not just separate, independent shvuas. He felt they're not like mutually exclusive one of the other. Right? He felt that on the contrary, that they're interdependent. Right? We have our shvuas, the Ummah Sa'olam has their shvua. But once the Ummah Sa'olam breaks their shvua, so we have a right to break out. That was his argument. So the Shvuas are interdependent, one and the other. Right? And the Mela, as long as Klal Yisrael was, you know, Germany, France, you know, Romania, Czechoslovakia, Poland, wherever they were, okay, believe me, Golis was no picnic. Right? Ever. Right? And now with time, Golis is a picnic. Okay? With an American, right, England, these places, it really is a pretty good life. Right? Believe me, for most of the history of Golis, Golis was no pleasure. He was persecuted against. They didn't have the same opportunities as going in. They lived in ghettos. It was no pity. But nevertheless, they were able to live. And they flourished. The Balitosis lived in a very tough time in the Crusades. But look, they wrote Tosis. They're able to flourish. They're able to even flourish religiously. Right? Great people lived in these countries. And the real truth is that even though if you read a Jewish history, you'll see that there were pogroms like all the time, right? But if you look at the history carefully, in any one country, there was a pogrom maybe every 200 years. If you look at the history of pogroms, you know, in this country there was one, in this country there was one, it seems as if there were, you know, every 20, 30 years, 40 years, whatever. That wasn't correct. In other words, the Jews were able to thrive in most of the countries. It was a tough life. They weren't given the same opportunities as the Guardians, but they were able to live. Right? Even if it was in a ghetto, but they were able to live. And also they were able to develop spiritually. Every once in a while, that was broken with a pogrom, so on and so forth. But the Holocaust was not just an episode in Golis. What the Holocaust was a real breakdown of Golis. It wasn't just persecuting the Jew, it was trying to kill every single last Jew, the white Jews. Obviously, there's no way in the world that anybody can describe the Holocaust as anything but that Shishtabdi Yisrael Yosem Adat, that they may find themselves serving more than is appropriate. The breakdown of Golis, there was millions of people that lived in Poland and Russia and France, Czechoslovakia, Romania, so on and so forth. Today, all you have is large American community. The biggest community today is Eretz Yisrael. You have Russian, there's still a lot of Jews in Russia. And you have the lesser communities, but still, you know, 100,000, 300,000 in England, 100,000 in England around, 300,000 in France, yeah, fairly substantial communities in one or two other places. But basically, there's no real Golis anymore, and that's because the Germans have totally destroyed our ability to live in these countries, and they actually, their plan was to destroy it. So the Mela, at that point, one would have to be crazy to argue that that wasn't the breach of their Shvuah. So argues Rav Soloveitchik, we were free to break our shoes. And that's how he sees that the very aftermath of the Holocaust, that's when the state of Israel was declared. That's Rav Aaron Soloveitchik's argument, and I think a very, very logical argument. Okay. But there are a few others.
Right. Another powerful argument is that the Shvuas means that you can't fight, you can't scale the walls, that you can't fight for Eretz Yisrael. Okay. But the argument is that in 1948, that's not what happened. Right? That just like in the time of Koresh, we were given permission to go back to Eretz Yisrael. 1948, by a declaration of the United Nations, they were the ones who declared the Jewish state. It wasn't that we fought for it. It wasn't that, you know, that we went to war because we went to war because the Arabs didn't accept the UN resolution, the UN partition. So, another
argument that I think in a way that's the simplest and the best argument is that it wasn't the breach, what we did wasn't the breach of the shores, because we didn't take it by force. It was granted to us as a Ummah Salt, which is okay. That's what happened in the time of the second day of the Jewish Islam. Okay? Third argument, somebody very big gong, Zimmerman, was really a true genius. Also, besides being an unbelievable genius in Torah, genius in physics and math, actually wrote a sefer on Kiddush HaKodesh, completed astronomy, other than that. So he argued a very simple argument. He says, Shulayalu Koma means you can't come and take Eretz Yisrael from the outside. But he says that's not what happened. We fought from the inside. Everybody agrees that Jews were allowed to make a division beyond that. And there were 600,000 Jews at the time who were living in Eretz Yisrael. They were threatened by the Arabs, and they protected themselves not by fighting, going to Eretz Yisrael to take it, but protected themselves from the inside, and that certainly is not a breach of the Shura. Third. Fourth argument. Right. And this also, I think, is a very important one. Right. The Pasuk says in Shir HaShirim, Mishbati Esfem Benos Shir HaShalayim, I make you take an oath, in Te'iru, that will be Hefker, like Ayolos HaSodeh, in Te'iru, in Te'orus Ha'ava Achetechpas. If you do anything to arouse the love until I desire it. Okay. Now, if there's indication that HaKadosh Baruch Hu desires it, then more of a shul. You have a right to take it. Right? So what does it mean that a kind of form of desire? Does it mean necessarily that the Mashiach comes? So when you learn Chalek, it's a Gemara Sanhedrin.
The Gemara quotes a Pasuk in Yechezkel. Okay. Pasuk is as follows. Anfeichem, Kohen Hashem, Anfeichem titenu, your branches will I give. Your pirion tisol, and your fruits you will carry. Ki krova levo. Because it's very close in coming. And he's talking about the Geula. Right? So the Gemara says, in other words, when the trees of Eretz Yisrael bears its fruits, right? So then that's a sign that the Geula is very close and coming. Right? And which Chazal say, and we have to learn it in Talmud, that Eilech HaKeitz Megula Mezeh. There's no clearer indication of the Geula's being on the way than if the fruits, the trees of Eretz Yisrael begin bearing its fruit. Now again, I can go into a whole reason why that's so, but I can also explain to you why maybe Eretz Yisrael is doing probably better than the whole world today in terms of financially. Not in the same recession as the whole world. Also may have to do something with this. But anyway, that's what the Navi says, that there's no greater sign of the Geula than if the fruits of Eretz Yisrael are blossoming and they're bearing its fruit. Fruits are bearing its fruit. And by the way, the Gemara says, the Gemara says, first you have Baruch Aleinu as Hashana Hazos, that's called Minit for us all the Tova. Right? Baruch HaBaruch as Hashana. And Hashem should bless the fruits. Right? The same Baruch HaPei Adama, right? The Sabeinu Mituba. What's the next Baruch? Well, it's Kibbutz Scholias.
Let's look at that reading of it.
Okay, first you have Baruch Aleinu Hashem Lekin Shazos, it's called Minis Vassal Letova. The next is Kabbish Shofar Gadol Chariseinu, the Sunnis Lekabbish Lyseinu, gather in our exiles, Rechata Hashem Lekabbish Nitfeyam and Yisrael. Okay, so the Gemara says, why is it in that order? The answer is that what precedes Kibbutz Golios when Eretz Yisrael starts bearing its fruit.
Right? That's a sign that the process of gruel is starting, and afterwards it's kibbutz kolim. And by the way, in our time, we've seen kibbutz kolim in an incredible, incredible way. How many people have started coming to Eretz Yisrael, including Russia, which is so close. Everywhere. Certainly we have seen kibbutz kolim. The Gemara says that's why it's in that order. So in any case, and everybody knows that even at the beginning of the 20th century, people who came to Eretz Yisrael talked about how desolate it was. The Ravan talks about the Middle Ages, the utter desolation of Eretz Yisrael. Amish didn't bear for anything, right? The Dafka, there's a Gemara that actually came at the end of Malchus, that in a way it's a bracha. Eretz Yisrael only bears its fruits for Klai Yisrael. Once we come back, then it starts bearing its fruits. It doesn't bear its fruits for the soul. Chayn the Glauchem, because of you, subject of ours, Eretz Yisrael is going to be plowed to the ground. So the argument is, the apple oranges are pretty popular around the world. Fruits of Eretz Yisrael, listen, vegetables, fruit, much better than I think, than anywhere else in the world. As Murray said, that's the strongest indication that the gruel is coming. Okay. The argument is, once that happens, that's not your tefillah. But obviously, if it's purpose, desire, and that contract, keep it scholarly, it follows that. Okay. And therefore, we're already living in a time that there's clear indication that the Baruch wants us to come back there. It's a beautiful story of the Chafetz Chaim. A very old friend of his decided to go to Eretz Yisrael, an old man. So he went, we didn't hear from him for a long time. Like a half a year later, he gets a letter from him. And he opens up the letter, he reads it, and then he starts clapping his hands and starts dancing around the table. People ask him, what are you so excited about? He says, I just got a letter from him. He wrote is that he was standing in Matni Yehuda. Matni Yehuda is pretty old, right? And he says that he was trying to choose between 15, 20 vegetables for Shabbos and various fruit. And he says, but in Russia, we had like a rotten potato and an onion, that's all you had. Right? And Chaim read that, and he started dancing around and singing, Eloch HaKeitz V'Gula B'Zeh. This is a greater invitation. Okay, and that's a further argument that we have indications in our time that Kadosh Baruch Hu wants us to come back. Not only that, in a certain sense, in the second time, the second day, somebody, the Cyrus, Koresh, gave a declaration that Klal Yisrael can go back. That's when, that was a Pinovi, somebody's going to give that type of declaration. The Balfour Declaration is almost a carbon copy of what happened in the time of Koresh. Koresh gave it, Koresh gave it, pretty soon he rescinded it. The Balfour Declaration gave us a right to go back to Eretz Yisrael. Pretty soon the British started playing games, they rescinded it. But there's also a tremendous similarity that there was a remembrance in our time, very similar to the second day of Hamikdash. And therefore, once is an indication that the Baruch wants us to come back, so the mail will no longer abound to our Shavuos. Those are the basic responses plus most of the people are not going to be religious. Okay, mention that safer. But if you look carefully, the Gemara really believes that we are even more than what we call racist, saying. The Gemara believes that Chazal tells that there's a Mashiach ben Yosef and a Mashiach ben David. First, it was Shepinosa, then it was Shepinovich. And it doesn't mean we know the part of the death of Shepinosa. The raw field that doesn't necessarily refer to a person, but refer to a woman. And if you read the Groff carefully, obviously it's an opinion that Mashiach ben Yosef is like Yosef of Mitzrayim. And he was a mashbir or a choleric Mitzrayim. In other words, he set the physical stage, provided the food, right, for pious so they will come down to Mitzrayim. And that's what Mashiach ben Yosef is, setting the physical stage of the spiritual ruler. Look carefully at the draw. It's very clear that you don't believe that that's what Zionism is about. Something setting the physical stage, building up, where it's a sorrow, right? Economically, physically, etc., before and it's a stage of the Shia that knows it. That's what the draw seems to hold. Again, maybe at some point we'll develop that. In any case, just in conclusion, I want to say, like I said before, very, very few people are that thrilled, very, very positive about me having the independent state of Israel. Yes, Hallel, no Hallel. Those should be left as religious issues, which they are. Right? Because religious issues, some people should say it, some people shouldn't say it, with a brother, without a brother. But my side, I think, is a wrap today. They say I'll have that problem. And tomorrow, which is also a part of taking the halakhic issues for what they are, Yom HaTzur today is really, this year is really supposed to be on Friday. So very admirably, they don't make it on Friday because they're afraid that it's going to the ceremony. Ceremonies are going to interfere with Shemira Shabbos. So they push it forward to tonight and tomorrow. Okay? So once it's not the day, even if you're then you say Hallel, are you supposed to have to say Hallel? It's not the day. I'm almost sure that Erkez Rav says it on Friday. You don't say tomorrow. Usually we say Yeshiva says Hallel without a bracha, you know, right after Shemon Esrei, because it's not really the day of the Torah. Tomorrow we'll be saying it. Celebration suggests all the way again without it after the completion of that one at that point. Saying Hallel, but it's not really right. Okay? Whether yes Hallel, yes Hallel, no music, right? That is basically should be kept as a religious issue. What's important is to realize that you people have an incredible how of time has such an incredible source for the first time in 2,000 years. Have back the independent state of Eretz Yisrael. Right? Come here so easily. You come, you go, you go back, you come, Eretz Yisrael. No big deal. You come to Eretz Yisrael. Imagine being in Eretz Yisrael, or in Eretz Yisrael. The great grandfathers would have given their right arm for that. You have it, an Amish on a silver platter. What a tremendous, tremendous schus it is. And whichever way you do it, we have to realize that we have to show incredible appreciation to Hashem Baruch Hu for bringing us to this point. Just hope that from our stage, we will only go further and further until we marry the Shalema, according to the sources that I told you. Ain't look like Gates and the Bulletin is not that far in the Shalema.